This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Last week, the provinces and territories began rolling out their plans on offering COVID-19 vaccines to children aged 5 to 11. Health Canada had a pediatric vaccine approved a couple of days earlier. To learn more about this vaccine for children, we are joined by pediatric infectious disease specialist, Dr. Michelle Barton-Forbes. Dr. Barton-Forbes is also an associate professor at Western's Schulich School of Medicine and Dentistry. Dr. Barton-Forbes, thank you so much for making time to be with us this morning.
You're welcome.
So before we talk about the vaccines themselves, what impact has COVID-19 had on children?
That's a great question. So, I mean, as you know, in the early waves of the pandemic, a lot of focus was addressed, rightfully so, on the elderly who we know were totally at high risk of admission and death. As the waves continued and as we vaccinated the elderly and the middle age and the adults, we see a different pattern happening now where the majority of cases are occurring in younger persons or unvaccinated persons. And of course, our children are not vaccinated, so they fall into that group. So even though, generally speaking, COVID does not really cause devastating illness in children, majority of children will have mild or asymptomatic disease, we still end up with some children getting sick enough to get admitted. And then still low, 1% of children, generally 1% or less than 1% of children get admitted for COVID. And then of those, up to 20% of those will end up in ICU. And it depends on what age group you're talking about in terms of which ones will end up. We know that the adolescents have the highest risk of being admitted to the intensive care unit, and following them would be the children between 5 and 11 years of age. Off admitted, recent studies in Canada, so the CPSP, which is the Canadian Pediatric Society, runs a surveillance program across the country and registers where all pediatricians report their COVID positive cases across the country. So the CPSP group has published data on how COVID is affecting children in Canada. And that data basically confirms that amongst admitted children, up to 20 to 30% of those will be, around about 25% of those will fall into the, admitted to ICU will fall into the 5 to 11 year age group. So they're not insignificant. Once they're admitted, up to a quarter of that age group may get admitted to the intensive care unit. So that's important. So that's one aspect of the impact of COVID on the children. Fortunately, it doesn't cause much mortality in children. Then we talk about later onset effects on children. The later effects can be as early as 2 to 6 weeks after the acute infection. Some children get a dysregulated immune system, and as a result, end up with a multi-system inflammatory illness, what we call MISC. And that is a potentially serious illness in the sense that children who have that condition all require admission. And and a significant percentage of those end up in intensive care units. So it is not that that illness, fortunately, does not happen frequently. We don't have the exact rates for Canada yet, but in the United States, it occurs at a rate of 1 in 3,000 children will end up with this multi-inflammatory syndrome. And this syndrome, as I said, if the children end up with it, a significant amount of them will end up in intensive care unit with acute cardiac needs. But fortunately, they recover, most of them recover. There can be fatalities, and in the States, of the 5,000 cases that they have reported in the States, just over 5,000 cases, 48 children have died. So fortunately, in Canada, we have not had that number of deaths. Deaths are rare in Canada. So those are some of the acute and subacute short-term effects of COVID. There are longer effects of COVID. We talk about the long COVID. Now that information is evolving as we speak, and we don't yet have Canadian data on this, but data from places like Italy and other places have published, and the rates seem to be ranging from about 2 to 20% of children may, depending on which study you quote, may end up with this long COVID syndrome. Mm-hmm. And by far, it's more common in adults, but it is distressing in children. And by far, probably the more common symptoms described include a prolonged loss of taste, headache, and fatigue. But you can have other annoying symptoms like insomnia, ringing in the ears. So it's not insignificant if your child ends up with this. And what's concerning is that you can't predict necessarily, or we don't know yet, the risk factors for this particular long COVID. But we do know that even if the child has asymptomatic infection, they can still end up with this long COVID. So that's that's a bit more distressing.
Yeah, of course.
Because even though it's small numbers, let's say it's as small as 2%, because the range goes from 2 to 20%. If we have lots of children getting COVID, and we include the asymptomatic ones, it will end up being quite a burden over time. And there are also emotional changes. Some of them go through depression and that sort of a thing. So long COVID is something we still need more information on, but concerning enough. And then, of course.
Oh, no, please continue. Please continue. Please continue. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, of course, the other impacts that we need to recognize is the indirect impacts. There are so many. In particular, children over this COVID have had to, they've been the silent, the unrecognized victims of the pandemic. In the first leg, everybody was focused on all the acute morbidity and mortality in the adults, and probably didn't realize how much it was affecting children. But I think we all have come to recognize that our children have had to sacrifice a lot in this pandemic, in terms of school. That's a huge big aspect of the child's development, and not having in school, you know, a lot of disruptions in school learning, in their social and extracurricular activities that impact not just their education, but their mental health and social health. And so those are some of the things. And then, of course, children also have been denied the connection with their grandparents, having to feel the guilt, having to deal with the loss of parents. Some children have become orphans in this pandemic. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, not as much in the developed countries as the developing countries, where some children have lost, you know, like depending on which country you're talking about, one in three for every adult lost, five children may be made orphans. And so this is not without note. And then, of course, lastly, the impact on their well health care. That's immunizations, for example. We know, I pick immunizations because that's so basic to primary health care of children. Children get routine immunizations regularly, and even that program got halted through the pandemic because healthcare facilities had to refocus. Doctors' offices had to refocus. They went to virtual offices, and then the hospitals weren't able to address those primary care needs, obviously, because the hospital was dealing with heavy load of the burden acute COVID on adults. So it's huge, huge. I don't think I've even captured the full extent, but that's some of what our children have been through with this pandemic. So lots of impact.
I think that speaks volumes, right? Because you laid a really solid foundation there. And as you say, it doesn't even cover the full extent of the impact on children. And I think that's where we can bring the conversation to these vaccines that are now available in Canada. So let's talk about the vaccine itself. How has the COVID vaccine been adapted for children in this pediatric form?
Okay, so in terms of the vaccine, it's basically the same vaccine, but they've modified the dose of the vaccine. So the vaccine was normally given at a dose of 30 micrograms, and it was a third of that. It's now a third of that dose that is being given to children. And that basically that third dose, they tried several other doses, and based on the responses, they were able to go to the lowest possible dose that would achieve good protection. So that's the big difference. The dose has been reduced significantly.
I know that it's early days still, but do we have a sense of what the efficacy of the pediatric vaccine might be?
Oh, yeah. So the clinical trials were done, as you know, in just over 2,000 children. And based on the data from that trial published in New England Journal of Medicine on November 9th, that study showed that the vaccine efficacy was 91.7%, which is really quite good and comparable to the rates that were described in adults. And also, so the vaccine efficacy is around about 94% in older folks and 100% in the adolescents. And so anything over 90% is really quite good, good performance. And I think we need to be clear, though, that when we talk about efficacy of vaccines for viral illnesses, we're really looking at its ability to protect against serious infection that will take you into hospital or into ICU or kill you. So that's how we measure efficacy. We're not really looking at preventing the disease in totality, because we know that's how viral vaccines, like similar, that's the same thing for the flu. The aim of the flu vaccine or the measure of efficacy is aimed at looking at how well it protects against serious infection.
I think that's a really good distinction, and thank you for reminding us of that one. So let's talk about side effects here, because what side effects, if any, might parents expect after their child receives a dose? Is it similar to adults? I remember being something of a sweaty mess the day after my second shot.
Okay, so good question that you ask. So we do know that the vaccine basically does cause a bit of soreness at the arm, and that's not unusual for the age group. All age groups have had that experience where there is soreness at the arm. So we can anticipate that the child will have some discomfort at the arm. And then some children, well, we know that the older folks have had things like muscle aches, headache, even flu, kind of feeling flu-like, and maybe low-grade fevers, a bit of chills in the older folks. Fortunately, in the children, those rates were a bit lower than the comparator group. They compared the younger children with persons 16 and older, and the rates were a bit lower. So yes, it can happen that they may have flu-like, a kind of flu-like feeling, but it definitely is much lower. So the kids are getting that much less.
Dr. Barton Forbes, I know in a 15-minute interview we can only cover so much ground, but where should parents go to learn more about the pediatric vaccine as they prepare to schedule an appointment for the child? And do you have any advice for parents who may be a bit hesitant?
Okay, so for information about the vaccine, the Canadian Pediatric Society has just published a document. They can Google it, CPS and vaccines for 5 to 11, COVID vaccines for 5 to 11. And that basically takes them to a document that summarizes the impact of COVID on children, and then how the vaccine trial, the data from the vaccine trial, and then what parents need to consider as they make their decisions. So that's a really good document. They can also go to their family doctor or pediatrician or nurse practitioner to discuss this further, because the document was actually published for health practitioners, but it is still, it does actually capture things that the parents can use. But if it's proven to be a little challenging, they can discuss this document with their family doctor or healthcare practitioner.
Dr. Barton Forbes, we thank you. Sorry, please go ahead. Continue. Sorry, I cut you off there. I got excited.
I just want to say, because the parents are hesitant, I think, because they are worried about whether their children will get the myocarditis, the rare event of myocarditis that was described in or has been seen in the adolescents. And I emphasize it is rare, but one good thing is that we have a track record of experience from the adolescents. And we do know that even if the child gets, the adolescent child gets myocarditis, the children do very well, and we have not had any really poor outcomes from the myocarditis. Myocarditis is actually a common consequence of viral infections. So that's something that we are accustomed to seeing in the as we take care of children. So I just want to just reassure them in the sense that even though, and first of all, the trial in the 5 to 11 year old did not identify any cases of myocarditis, but we have to be cautious with that because we only studied 2,000 folks, but we do have an accumulating amount of evidence from the older child. And we know that in the older child, events are rare. And so it is even anticipated that it's even much rarer if it is going to happen, it's going to be probably much rarer in the 5 to 11 year old, where we don't usually see as much viral myocarditis in this age group as we see viral myocarditis in the adolescent. So following that track record, we don't expect, and plus a lower dose of the vaccine was used in the children. So there are lots of factors that may influence that, but we continue to watch. For, the great thing is that the Canadian system is excellent as it relates to vaccine monitoring. And we can rest assured that our regulators are actually monitoring this system, monitoring the rollout. And that gives us comfort that Canadian children will be kept safe through all of this. We only have their best interests at heart.
Dr. Barton Forbes, I can't thank you enough for the time you've given us today, but I also thank you and your colleagues for your expertise and all the work you're doing on this file. Thank you again, and best of luck with all the research in the future.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.